Jim Taylor back on the WMJ Sports Line on this Saturday morning. Good to have you along. We have two in-studio guests today going to talk about, I call it, modern history topic with really the growth of girls' athletics, and we want to talk about Title IX. And we have the opportunity this morning to visit with Mary Flint. You've heard her on the WMJ airwaves before, and Katie Hassan as well. First up, good morning. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
Good morning.
All right. And as far as background, I think most people realize Katie Hassan, born on the mean streets of Cambridge, Illinois, class of 1987. And then Mary Flint, we have a love-hate relationship with Monticello. I guess we love Monticello because Coach Walter's there now, but we hate Monticello because they took him away from us, too. But a graduate of Monticello in
1972. I grew up a Monticello sage.
All right. Long live the Owls.
That's right.
All right. We talk about Title IX. I call it modern history. Now, both of you have daughters. Devin, a graduate of Rockridge High School. Your daughter,
Karen.
Karen is at Augustana College.
Yes.
Great job there, and a graduate of Aledo High School. So, modern history. First up, I just want to segue and say, do you think most female student athletes today understand, you know, Title IX being implemented in the 1970s? And you know, grandparents, like, I look at my situation, my daughter Tess, her mother Nikki was an opportunity, grew up post Title IX, got to play all the sports growing up. Her grandmothers did not. So that's in terms of modern history for me. You think most kids understand that today? If you told them today, hey, if you grew up in 1972, you're not playing basketball for the Rockets, you're not running track, not playing softball, not playing volleyball. And they would say what?
Well, I think I would agree. I don't think they have any idea how recent the history of women's sports really is, because it's always been around for them. And even for me, you know, growing up being in high school in the mid-80s, you know, I was able to play all the sports. Now, in junior high, we only had basketball and track. We didn't have junior high volleyball, but that's what it was, and we had the opportunity to play. And I think, you know, the kids today, and including my daughter Devin, who's now a senior in college, you know, probably doesn't realize how far we've come in a fairly short amount of time.
And you, Mary Flint, you can speak to the fact that you did not get the opportunity to play, got a coach.
I've given that speech over the years to some of my teams, but I really like sports. I minored in PE at Illinois State, became an elementary teacher, but I would have given anything to have been able to represent my school and play sports. And I would have gone out for every sport there was, undoubtedly, but we had none. And that was in 1972. We played GAA. I know a lot of people listening will be shaking their heads on that. We had tournaments, and we, you know, had a little after-school things, but no competitive scholastic competitions. So when I moved here in Aledo, they had started, but it was very, very, very early. And I don't think kids now would see just how appreciative those girls were. The early years, the 1975, 76, 77, those early years, girls were just so pleased to be able to represent their school and to have the uniform on. And I'm not sure kids now appreciate that.
Well, and to talk about modern history, what was it? It was probably about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, maybe longer than that, that they had the 100-year celebration of boys basketball.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So the 100-year celebration of girls' basketball state tournament will be 2077.
Right, exactly.
So that is, you know, in terms of where we're at, in terms of being modern history.
Well, yeah, and even at the collegiate level. I played basketball at Augustana, and either my junior or senior year at Augustana, 90 or 91, I remember when we qualified for the NCAA tournament for D3, we all got these little pins, and it was the 10th anniversary of the NCAA tournament. 10th,
yeah.
You know, and granted, you know, women's sports existed prior to that in different forms, the old AIAW. So it wasn't like it hadn't been around at all. It had been in a little different format. But, you know, you think NCAA basketball is synonymous with March Madness, and really it hadn't been around that long.
So Mary can speak to the fact of not having the opportunity to play, got a coach. But, Katie, from your situation, having a daughter play and having yourself get the opportunity to play, but your mother not. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And I heard a lot of those same stories. My mom graduated in 1965, so just a little bit older than Mary. I heard her talking about it, my dad talking about, you know, what it was like at Cambridge High School, you know, with the GAA tournaments and even, which Iowa kept going for a while, the 3-on-3 version. You know, they wouldn't let the girls play full court even in those days. And Iowa maintained that tradition for a while, even interscholastically. But yeah, I definitely heard those stories from Mom, and you know, she was the same way as Mary. She would have been, you know, would have loved to be able to play and participate interscholastically, but she did what she had available to her. And, you know, I was blessed, obviously, to be on the front end of that. And then, you know, eventually as a collegiate athlete, and then, you know, as a coach at the high school and junior high level once I got out of college. And then as a mom and as a school administrator, you know, seeing the growth of that over time and seeing the opportunities my daughter has had, you know, that I didn't have one generation prior, and that definitely my mom didn't have the generation prior to that. So it's we've come a long way, to use, what was that, Virginia Slims, that commercial?
Yeah, those were the days.
Yeah, and the incremental growth, because you brought a yearbook in from Aledo,
right,
where the first, when you're talking about the first season of girls basketball equated to 6 games, which is now basically the first week of the season with a tournament you play in.
Right. You know, I jotted down, I hope it's okay to start on this now, but I started out some of the things I wrote down, just some of the changes. And again, girls listening to this or anybody are probably like, what? Okay, for one thing, we had played with a regular, you'd call it boys basketball now. You know, there was no
different
sizes or anything.
Yeah, that switch happened my senior year.
There you go. So we had the big basketballs. I was telling you guys before, we had uniforms. They all had to have sleeves in them. I mean, even track. You know, you look at these yearbook pictures, they all had sleeves in them. There was no such thing as a summer league, summer practice, weightlifting.
Most
heaven
coaches,
forbid.
Most coaches today will say, please, go back to that day.
Well, yeah, and we actually, you know, when I was in high school was when the leagues were starting. And we went over to, you know, Blackhawk East and played 2 or 3 nights of basketball. And then we had a couple other nights a week that we went over to the community center in Geneseo and played volleyball. So yeah, that was just getting started.
And that was basically 10 years after what I'm saying. And, all of these things, and just some little minor things. Okay. The school washed our uniforms. And you had managers. Managers were so important when I started. They had these huge trunks, 2 big giant trunks with handles on the ends. And in them would be your nicely folded uniforms that the school had washed and your warm-up suits, which would be like what boys were. You know, they had the real long, like baggy pants with stripes down them and all, and then the tops. And those were all neatly folded in the trunks.
Your visual imagery is just like so on point this morning.
It's unbelievable. And here came your managers carrying these big trunks into the locker room, open them up, the girls would get them out. Oh my goodness. And we just, when you just think back between then and now, and perhaps there would be a happy medium somewhere in there, but to think of a girl going for weightlifting or even considering it was just an idea you would never even think of.
Mm-hmm.
But you tell a great story, and I know when you were inducted into the Mercer County High School Hall of Fame a couple years ago, about kind of initially, the roads are being paved for girls' athletics with Title IX, but it's still a little bit resisted, and it's still a little bit of an afterthought. And that was noticeable with, you know, how they would hire coaches to begin with. And I'm not disrespecting the people they hire, but some of those teachers wanted to make sure the girls had the opportunities. That wasn't their specialized background, but a person like Dick Hogan, who's most noted for being the band instructor that he was at Mercer County, and Lee Kempfer being the great math teacher she was, they paved the way to say, hey, if we need a girls' basketball team and there's not a coach here, we'll do it.
That's all they said, too. I missed it by 1 year of when they actually started, but I've talked to both of them. They're great friends of mine with me being a teacher. But they so wanted equal opportunity for girls, and they so wanted those girls, again, to represent their school. And the girls begged them, somebody in the high school, you know, because then you had to be a teacher in the district to really coach. So they just begged until Mr. Hogan relented from being band director, didn't know much about basketball and Lee Kiffer, but they so wanted those girls. And I know any girls that are listening now, they thank them so much for stepping up to the plate and doing that.
All right, so here's something for you, a kid. I'm talking to you, Mary Flynn, a kid that grew up in the 60s and 70s, all right? And you're sitting next to a person now that had the opportunity to play, had the opportunity also to coach, and now had the opportunity to be an administrator as a female.
Yeah,
so
there
you tell me about that in the 60s and 70s, how that was that had to be an extreme exception and not the rule in that era.
Oh, very much so. In fact, I always joke about in the 60s and 70s is when you'd walk by the teacher's lounge and smoke would be flying out from under the door.
Absolutely.
That the teachers were taking their breaks. But I jest. No, I don't jest. That was true. But as a little aside, so things... we had, at Monticello, we had two women PE teachers. And, you know, I feel like we kind of were discussing this before. The females and the males as to who could be around or influence, you know. So we had the two women PE teachers. I was so blessed. Mrs. Heidkamp was her name. And she was so driven by making us, even though we didn't have sports, she really worked us, and I so much appreciated that. So it was just women, but who was always your high school principals, always the administrators were males. I mean, without a doubt, I can't even remotely remember anybody, you know, that would have been a female really role model except my two PE teachers.
So what about, I mean, being in that position then, Katie, I mean, do you sometimes think about that and say, in the 60s and 70s, I probably wouldn't have had that opportunity?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And I mean, even, you know, during my time, you know, my first teaching job was teaching high school biology at Rova High School in Oneida. And I coached some volleyball, varsity volleyball, coached some junior high basketball. And in my last 4 years there, took over for Bill Whalen as athletic director. And I was the only female AD in the conference.
Yeah.
You know, so that was, you know, that was definitely, I don't feel like a ground, you know, a trailblazer or anything like that. And there were some other female ADs in the area, but, you know, it was just kind of a natural progression. And thankfully I had the opportunity to follow, you know, my interests and what I wanted to do, you know, to be able to do that. And same thing in moving into a principal's position. And, you know, there's a lot of female principals out there now. We're, you know, I don't know what the numbers are. I think we're still probably in, especially as a high school principal, probably still mm-hmm. in the minority. You know, but I think it's important to represent and to be there supporting, you know, all of our sports and activities. And I take a lot of pride in being able to do that.
And I think that what is interesting about it, when you look at the early stages, because there wasn't, women didn't have or females didn't have a lot of experience. Well, they had virtually no experience coaching interscholastic athletics because they didn't have it. So initially in the 70s and probably much of the 80s, most of the coaches in girls athletics were males just because of the fact that there wasn't the experience kind of to draw from. So as you go along each decade or each five-year increment, I mean, you realistically see more women than getting into coaching, but that's because, you know, they had not a lot of experience prior to 1972 or 73.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, you look right here at Aledo and Cambridge, you know, you had the male head coaches at least, and they did have the experience. And I think in my case, I just learned it was Daryl Jackson, and I just learned everything I could from him because he did have the experience of doing boys. Many of the coaches also had fears of interacting or being around the girls, going into the locker room post-game or halftime. Mm-hmm. That was a real concern. And then oftentimes, I think in the back of many schools' minds, you might need a female assistant coach to go into those locker rooms with you, et cetera. You know, you got to think about things like that, I think, too.
So, you know, and this is a good resource, I was telling Mary and Katie off the air, the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum, they do these things called oral history projects. And variety of topics as it relates to education. I know they have one on school district consolidation. Well, they have one on, they label it girls basketball, but it's more of a Title IX subject. In these oral history projects, they involve a cross-section. I think there's like 35 in-depth, I'm talking about in-depth interviews where they have the audio interview and the complete transcript. And they have all these key people in Illinois that were involved basically at the ground level. And that's oralhistory.illinois.gov, and you just click on sports stories, and then there's a girls basketball button. And you can't listen to this all at once. I'm just saying it's a good thing to go back and listen to some of these stories. And I was telling Mary and Katie in the front office before going on the air, the old Carthage girls coach, I mean, they're the traditional basketball power. Dick Berry was his name. And he talked a little bit about kind of the resistance he felt in that early era of being a male and coaching girls athletics, where some people would say, hey, man, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Why are you doing this? You know, come on, man. Is this a joke? And we see where he can say, well, no, it's not a joke. Look at my program I created. But he was leery initially going in, and, you know, he was worried about the kids who initially had to be the trailblazer to say, we're going to play girls basketball. And then, you know, of course, at that era, some of the kids say, well, you can't play. Girls have no business playing sports. So then he felt that pressure to say, hey, we're not going to practice at the main school. We're going to take these kids, get them away from town, let them get comfortable. So, I mean, that's the other thing about being in that era, being a teenage girl, we know the teenage years, how difficult they can be. And I think about the kids in that era, you know, being the first to say, hey, we're going to try and do this.
It took, you know, some amount of guts, like you say, to come out. But it just took, I just think it was so great of those first athletes, because some of the girls in the late 70s and early 80s really were athletes. They were. But others were not athletes.
And they had no experience.
No experience. I mean, you think now girls are dribbling basketballs in kindergarten, first grade, second grade, all the way through. Okay, they have no experience. We had to start at the very beginning. I mean, how do you do a layup? You step on the less. Everybody step on the
layup. In 2018.
Keep working on it.
People, even the boys I see, I mean, and my boss here goes crazy with boys and girls, how they still shoot the ball today. So anyway.
I know. I do that sometimes too, even though it's old school or whatever, not so much layups.
Use your left hand. Use the board.
Use the board. Get an angle. Going straight on is much more difficult. Get an angle a little bit. And free throw shooting. Jim, I can remember some of the early girls. And some of them still live in town, and we have good memories about it. But they could not get the ball from the free throw line to the basket.
Yeah.
Like, okay, now how do I do this? And we'd get our hands, and then it'd get, you know, like 7/8 of the way there. Use your legs. Act like you're getting shot up out of a cannon. Push. And they were so thrilled. And, of course, here's another thing. No three-pointers back then. Of course, that was boys and girls. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the girls, I'm so proud of them for just wanting to be on the team, because they were not athletic. They didn't really like to run that much. And they were so content to just be on the team. And I wish some of this would carry on to today. Girls love just being on the team. Did I have to start to stay on the team? No. Did I have to play a lot of minutes for me to remain on the team? No. I just wanted to be on the team. They were thrilled to get to ride the bus like the boys did.
Mm-hmm.
Go into opposing gyms, different locker rooms. The camaraderie of being with a team, having a coach, learning new things. Thrilled. And really, I never had any issue in the early days of anybody. Hey, I'm not playing enough. Gee, I wish I started. I mean, probably deep inside they did, but they were just so very content to just be there and be in the moment. And they made such long-lasting friendships.
Did you recollect, too, at that time, just in terms of girls getting the opportunity to play in front of an audience? You know what I'm saying? Of not being sure about, you know, is it right that we're playing? We're getting some resistance, things of that nature. And then am I good enough to play on that stage where, you know, are we going to be belittled, laughed at, or whatever? I mean, dealing with mm-hmm. that as a teenager, and then at that era of, well, some people said, should we have Title IX? There was some resistance to Title IX. Should there be girls under scholastic athletics? I mean, those kids at that age I'm talking about, I guess they get a lot of my respect because not having an idea of what to expect from the people that come and see them play.
No, and they really, some of them were not very good, but they learned. But again, they weren't really, just to look at them or see them, you wouldn't say, gee, they're really athletic or they're very gifted in sports or something. Some were. But, yeah, and, you know, we used to have facilities. We didn't have as many facilities as we do now. And here came all these girls sort of butting in on the boys' programs, you know, that used to have the gym all night, mm-hmm. like whenever they wanted, the wrestlers. And when we practiced in the early days, we would be in the high school gym most of the time, and the wrestlers would be right there in there with us, running steps and, you know, running like suicides and stuff, right almost with us. I mean, we were having separate practices, but that could be intimidating with the girls having the boys right there potentially. I don't remember any of that, though, really.
Did you feel any resistance coaching early, or was there any challenges from that?
No, I've had a blast. No, and I'll say this one more thing, but when I first got my fourth grade teaching job, it was at Apollo Elementary, and, you know, I'd played, like, intramurals at ISU and stuff, and I took classes, you know, as PE minor, like I said. So Lee Kempfer, with her JV, they'd practice in the Apollo gym, which has tile floor and it has a milk cooler with sharp corners in the corner, you know, and there they are practicing. Okay, so I'd always peek in because I just love sports, and she'd say, hi, you know, I'm Mrs. Kempfer. Hi, I'm Mary Riley, the first year. Hello. And she said, you know anything about basketball? And, of course, I didn't play. I didn't, but I'd taken some classes. Well, yeah. How'd you like to help me? Well, then the next year she just stepped aside because she knew that I really wanted to and would look into it. But, no, I was just young and first-year teacher and let's get after it. And but the girls were so excited. I remember when they'd make a basket or, you know, and the crowd would be, yay, because it was all things that we had never done before, a real nice bounce pass assist or something. People were just so excited just to be there.
I remember when I grew up in the first time I had a chance to see a girl's, because I was a 1985 graduate, so I grew up, you know, kid in the 70s where most were Title IX to just take it off. Most junior highs had girls' athletics, but I remember the first girls' basketball game I ever went to was at UT, and it was a postseason game. And is it the Wankett sisters?
Val Wankett.
Val Wankett was.
Yeah.
Was it Atkinson? They went.
Oh yeah,
to?
Yeah, definitely. And that was a big rival of ours.
I remember I went to the game, and I was, you know, being a boy, of course, that era. It's like, what, girls playing basketball? What? Yeah, I got to see this. And I remember seeing that Wankett kid girl play. I'm like, man, that girl is good. But
well.
But,
She played at Illinois State, didn't she?
Yeah, she played at Bradley.
Or Bradley.
And Van Hefty is her married name now. Yeah, that she's Jade is her daughter.
That's
Jade,
what I
Morgan,
like to see.
And Selena.
But before I want you to share, though, in terms of kind of where, you know, so you started in the 70s, but, you know, there was some significant movement made, and a lot of that involved, you know, basically, if you're having success and it's a good product and there's some excitement, people are going to be drawn to it with interscholastic mm-hmm. athletics because it's about town pride. And you told a great story I didn't realize off the air that in 1985, mm-hmm. one of the great postseason games, I'm like, man, I wish I'd have been here then. Cambridge played, Who in
Carthage?
Carthage in the Super Sectional at Alexis. Man, I want to go to that game. And you said, I mean, that.
Yeah, I was a sophomore in high school then, playing on the varsity. We had just kind of turned the corner. My freshman year, we were 500. We were 11-11. I remember, and they had some success earlier than that. Players like Miss and Chris Dibdahl, they had won a district back in the late 70s, early 80s, and then kind of had some down seasons. And then when I got into high school, we started having some success with some young players and working our way back up. And my sophomore year, we got on a roll and won our regional at Weathersfield. Kewanee Weathersfield. We beat Kewanee High in the regional championship game. And then went on and had our sectional at Rova. Beat Monmouth High School in the first game.
Holy
of the sectional.
Holy smokes, what a run
yep,
for the Vikings.
Yeah, beat them by 20. And then beat Abingdon in the sectional championship game at Rova. And then played our super at Alexis High School. And so all three of our steps along the state series were in Lincoln Trail Conference gyms. Because Alexis was, of course, still in the Lincoln Trail at that time. So, we go to the Super for the first time. And that, of course, was Sweet 16, your chance to go to the Elite Eight and make it to Champaign.
That was two classes then.
That was two classes. Yeah, so we're playing Carthage High School, which at that time was called Hancock Central, was their official IHSA name. Mm-hmm. And Dick Berry, the coach there, and Carl Goff, my coach at mm-hmm. Cambridge. We went in, the place was packed. I remember arriving on the bus for the game and there were people lined up out the door. The gym was already full. And of course, Alexis isn't a huge gym, but they had the super, the place was packed and
it was 98 degrees.
I'm sure it was. And they had a row of folding chairs along the baseline and three or four people deep standing behind them on the baseline. It was just packed to the gills. And we were fortunate enough. Our best player, Josie Todd was a junior. She and her twin Jenny, were juniors and Josie ended up signing with the University of Illinois, and she got fouled at the basically as time expired, and with a tie game, and hit the front end of a 1-on-1 with no time on the clock to send us to state. Yep, and it was pandemonium.
And was that the Assembly Hall for girls too?
Assembly Hall for girls.
Yeah,
yep.
It started out all those early ones were at Assembly Hall. So I took my teams there every year.
So yeah. you see that. Story, okay. So that's 85, you said,
mm-hmm,
right?
85.
So you go from, you know, 70. What was the first year for the team at Aledo? You said 74?
Well, basketball was 75, 76. Track and volleyball started in 74, 75.
But when, you know, because I think the IHSA, their first official state tournament series was 77. So that would have been mm-hmm. the eighth mm-hmm. year. But from you, Mary, was there like a watershed moment where you thought, I think we're here to stay, you know, we've made it, you know, because you say when you started earlier, it's like, oh, man, some of these kids, you know, but when did you think that, hey, this is more than us breaking some type of threshold, we're here for good now, this is something to be reckoned with, and it's a serious, you know, interscholastic endeavor. Was there like a moment where you said, you know, we're here to stay now.
Yeah, by the way, Katie was a heck of a basketball player. I coached O'Darrell, you know, we played Cambridge.
Yeah.
And I remember all those names. Boy, that was great hearing all those names again. She was a whale of a post player.
By the way, we had some good rivalries.
Yeah,
but I just want to tell people, this is such a great conversation this morning, but take it away again.
Yeah,
the
thanks. Well, yeah, we played. I know all those kids, so it was great. And Katie's dad, Don Huline, always reffed a lot of our games. So I got to know Don and Katie. I've known them for a long time. So anyway, when it started getting serious, at least for me, of course, I'm kind of a competitive person. Hello, a lot of people say that. But we started JV. We won four conference championships in a row. Not the first couple years. And again, I was JV, but later when Tracy Fry, Kathy Clausen, those girls, then I did varsity for a few years. But I was JV when I'm telling all these stories. But we won conference 4 years in a row. And 1 year we were undefeated JV conference. And that to me, Jim, when you get the little plaque.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
we
yeah.
had the main big plaque and then all the little additions under it that dangled down year by year, and they were presenting those to us. Then I think it kind of became real because the boys had the trophy cases and they were filled with various things. And here we were, you know, doing similar type things. And volleyball, Judy Nelson started volleyball. Well, of course, she married and became the great legendary here, Judy Richmond, and our Judy Richmond volleyball tournament. She was so good, and they had great success and won some things. And I think, to me, that was one of the times where, wow, you know, we're doing competition. We're looking at our one-loss record. We're coaching strategy. The girls are understanding the game. And we had some huge crowds. I think people were really hungry back then. We had some of our, well, the years I had Tracy Fry and Kathy Clausen, it was so loud in there. A lot of times I'd have to have cards showing. Scott Anderson did one of the best. I've got a little tape of that. WRMJ, Scott Anderson doing that game. And, you know, that was later, like in 87, 88, 89.
Yeah, and we were the same way. You know, we had, you know, that we started in our state run, you know, obviously, you know, grew the popularity and, you know, you had to have a seat. And granted, the Cambridge gym isn't very big with our restraining line.
I love it. I love the restraining line. And I love the games that are still played over there today.
Yeah.
Now, we Mercer County, we always complain when we go over there. But the games, to me, are just like the feel of that gym, I'm like, I like it.
Well, I'll give you a good story on that one. And, of course, you know, we got to the point where we were definitely packing the place there. And Coach Carl Goff, my coach, he had made arrangements, and he was also our AD. And I don't know how it worked, but after our state run, my junior year, we got it on the schedule that we were supposed to have a game against Rock Island. And Coach Goff knew somebody and got some strings pulled. We were supposed to play that game at Rocky in the field house, not in the girls' gym, but in the field house. And I don't know how he did that, but that was where the schedule was. And unfortunately, we got snowed out. We had bad weather. We couldn't play it. But we rescheduled it at Cambridge.
Ooh.
And those Rocky girls came into that packed gym, and I don't think they knew, you know, again, not having big crowds and so forth. And we ended up beating them by 12 or 14 points.
And they're like, what's that gym? All right. We're moving along here, but I got to take a quick commercial break. Much more coming up, but great to have Katie Hassan and Mary Flint with us in the WMJ studios talking Title IX on this Saturday morning. All right, Jim Taylor back on WMJ and WMJ.com. Hey, we do have a special observation with one of our great listeners, and he's been on this show before, and he tells a great story today about he has a doctor's appointment, but he was driving around because he wanted to listen to this, so he's going to be late to that doctor's appointment. But Bill Breen wants to tell a quick story about Judy Richmond, is that right?
Yeah.
Take it away. Thanks for listening, Coach.
No. Well, Jim, thank you. Ladies, thank you. I was driving around. I started listening to the show. And I went, oh, this is cool. So I called and canceled my appointment. I didn't have anywhere else to go, so I've been driving around town listening to you guys. Finally, I just stopped and I said, I got to come in and tell you, it's great. We started wrestling and volleyball the same year.
Yeah.
So Judy Nelson, of course, in those days, first of all, she was a great coach, a great friend. We started at the junior high at the same year, and we had such a great time. But the story you told, Mary, that here are the girls' basketballers running. The wrestlers were over to the side. I stopped practice, and everybody came around and said, boys, this isn't going to work. The girls are keeping up with us. And I said, you boys better pick it up. Well, they did. Well, Judy, being a competitor as she was, she noticed that we had picked up the intensity. She called the girls over. From that point on, every time we did that, you talk about some work. Some work got done. So it was, that was really good. She came to my house when the board passed wrestling and volleyball to have it. She came to my house. Together, we designed our uniforms.
Oh, there you
awesome,
go.
Man.
And then we made a pact. I think it was in blood that we had to have fans for both because they were new.
Yeah.
So I said, our wrestlers will be there. She goes, my volleyballers will be at the wrestling meets.
That's awesome.
So the wrestlers, of course, had hard hats and all kinds of get up. And the girls, they would do routines. So it was fun. Sorry, I just had to stop and tell you how much I enjoyed it.
That is super great.
All right. Get to your doctor's appointment and take your blood pressure medication.
Yeah.
All right, so Katie Hassan, so if I asked you and said you had to switch eras and you were in Mary Flint's era, and Mary Flint was in your era, so that would mean Katie Hassan can't play in the 1985 Super Sectional at Alexis against Hancock Central, a.k.a. Carthage, can't play at the Assembly Hall in the state tournament.
Mm-hmm.
What would you think
about
that?
That'd be tough.
You think you'd be in education today if you didn't have those opportunities?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think so. My mom will laugh at this one if she's listening, but she knows that back in one of those, you know, sixth grade career projects where you had to do your report, in all honesty, Jim Taylor, my report was on being a radio DJ.
Yeah.
now the truth comes out.
So when I retire, I'm
too
coming
bad
after
for you, Katie.
I'm coming after your job when I retire. No, I'm just kidding.
You've been on the air enough anyway.
But no, as I got into high school, I knew teaching, I wasn't sure exactly where, you know, what eras, and maybe it did have an influence, but you know, in the fact of loving sports and having the opportunity to coach and having those tight connections with teaching and coaching being in my educational experience of being a player, I don't know. I would think so, because, you know, I always had that love of it. I always had the love of sports, even tagging along with, you know, my dad when he played men's league ball, you know, when I was just a little one, and shooting baskets and all those types of things. I think one way or the other, I think I would have been a lot like Mary, and that I would have jumped at those first opportunities to be involved in it. I truly think I probably would have ended up in education anyway, because that's where, you know, that's where my path was going in my career. But I think I definitely would have jumped at some of those opportunities to get into coaching on the ground floor, even though I wouldn't have been able to be a player.
You know, Jim, oh,
go ahead.
Jim, Summer, when you were saying baseball, this is just another. When I was younger, and again, I just love sports so much, and we played outside. I lived right by Lincoln School in Monticello. In fact, Angie Welter, teaching, can look out her window and see my house in Monticello. So that's another small world thing. But we just played ball all the time. Okay, did I ever get to play in a game of anything? Like, did we have park district? Did we have YMCA? No. I went to all my brother's stuff. Watched every game, observed every little thing, never had one summer opportunity to do anything competitive.
That makes me sad.
Well, it made me sad, let me tell you.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, that's just so sad that you don't have that opportunity. And we're talking about, you know, the 51-year-old guy in the room is saying, that's modern history. But for a lot of people, a lot of kids I understand that are, you know, 2018 grads, that's so foreign to them, 1972. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying that is pretty modern history when you look at people like you that didn't have the opportunity to play.
Well, and also understand that I know Title IX has always had the connotation of being the women's sports law, but it's way bigger than that.
Yeah.
It's opened up opportunities because it wasn't necessarily, that law wasn't written to necessarily provide girls and women athletic opportunities.
Yeah.
That's a piece of it. But it has also opened doors for women in lots of other areas, whether it be going into the military, being a police officer,
right,
being a fireman, any of those other, you know, because Title IX, I don't have the specific language of the law down, but it basically prohibits discrimination on the basis of gender to any entity that receives federal funding. You know, so yes, Title IX has become the flag of women's sports, but it also opened up a lot of opportunities to young ladies of my age and even to Mary's age, and then everybody beyond. So it's a way bigger picture than that. But obviously, sport participation has been the stanchion of that.
It was interesting. This was last year. We had John Eldron one morning, and I thought it was interesting his observation how the culture of kind of the relationship between the student athlete and the family. And he talked about when he first started, basically dad went to the game, right, mm-hmm. to watch son play. Mm-hmm. And then eventually it transitioned to mom going. Mm-hmm. And then baby one, grandpa, then grandma and grandpa, then mm-hmm. both sets of grandparents, mm-hmm. then aunts and uncles. Yeah. And that has kind of skewed, you know, the relationship then between student athlete and coach sometimes, because all those people are there not necessarily watching. Well, they're there watching the game, but that's secondary to watching who they're there to supposedly watch, mm-hmm. their niece, their nephew, mm-hmm. their grandson, their granddaughter, mm-hmm. their son or their daughter. Has that been noticeable, you think, in girls' athletics, where initially, I don't know what the fan base looked like in the early 70s. Was it just maybe dad showing up or what it was like back then?
Yeah,
Because I think John Elder, what he said, had some very merit in terms of why maybe there's a little more pressure placed on the mm-hmm. coach, because there's so many eyes on him or her now, because it's just not dad going to the game anymore. It's the whole
friggin'
family.
Not just going to the game, but as these generations have passed through, now, like you were saying with your family, okay, now the daughter plays, but her mom played sports and understands the game.
Thinks she does.
Thinks. You know, and then, you know, eventually you can get grandmas. They've had the experience
yeah.
now. We had a lot of fans, and I don't remember anything really different from today's, where a lot of family members and aunts and uncles and neighbors came, but you get different generations of people who have actually played basketball. So now,
interesting,
they know or think they know.
Especially the officiating aspect.
Right. Referees could definitely speak on this on a whole different level. But you're talking people, I don't know about judging, but evaluating or whatever from their memories. You know, in the early years, none of their moms would have ever played ball. There wasn't any.
But you brought up the point, Katie, about Title IX being more, you know, people are always going to refer to it as the opportunity for girls to play interscholastic athletics. It's much more than that. Mm-hmm. But what impact do you think it had? And now you said you were going to, you said initially radio, huh? Fortunately, you went down another. By the way, we're looking for looking for an employee here. So Katie, we'll announce this morning, Katie Hassan is resigning as principal at Rock
Mountain.
No, 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 no,
no. But don't put that
What do you think, though, the impact has had on females with Title IX being implemented to say, I want to move in the educational field so I can be involved in interscholastic athletics as well as teaching. You see what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. And
do
I
you think it had an impact on that profession?
Oh, I think so, because it gave girls the experience of being players to then move into being coaches and even officials. And I spent a little bit of time officiating as well with my dad before I got into administration and didn't have any time at night anymore.
And by the way, there needs to be way more female
officials. Oh, absolutely.
In every
absolutely.
Sport.
Absolutely.
I totally agree.
You know, and it was a great experience, and I wish I had time to still do it because I love doing it. I just didn't have any nights to do
yeah,
so.
Right.
I think it did have an impact because it gave girls, while they were in school, the opportunity to play, which then gave them the insight and the desire to go on and to coach or maybe officiate. And it definitely grew that pool. And I read something here during the recent women's Final Four. You know, there was a little bit made, and it always comes up of, you know, 3 out of the 4 head coaches in the Final Four were men, mm-hmm. but 11 out of the 12 assistants were women.
Mm-hmm.
And so Muffet McGraw of Notre Dame, who won the mm-hmm. national championship, and if you didn't watch him, 3 very exciting games in the women's Final Four, you know, she commented on that and used that in some of her post-game commentary mm-hmm. and so forth as a, you know, inspiration and trying to motivate young girls and that whole conversation. And, you know, I think the other thing with Title IX also, the unfortunate side of Title IX, which was never intended to be that way, I would think, was the fact, unfortunately, that some quote-unquote minor sports for boys or men were lost
yeah.
or cut. And you still see this at, not so much, I don't think, at the high school level, but definitely at the university level, where unfortunately some of your minor sports, quote unquote minor sports for men, are on the chopping block because of a balance to meet Title IX compliance. And that's unfortunate. I don't think it was ever intended. But the goal is to have those equal opportunities and that balance, but not at the expense of losing opportunities for guys. It was to gain more opportunities for the gals.
And, you know, you were talking about your daughter, just as you were speaking. She's a physical therapist.
Athletic training.
Mm-hmm. My apologies.
No, that's
athletic
okay. Close.
Training. But, and I definitely know the difference. But, okay, athletic training. Had she not played sports and all, and had Title IX not come about, would any females have gone into athletic training? Like in my generation, any of my friends? I don't think so.
Oh, exactly.
Or physical therapy.
You know, we've talked about that, and I think that's her, you know, path of why she chose that path, is she wanted to stay involved in sports, didn't have the interest to coach after her, or be in education after her playing days were done. But she saw that as a path, sees that as a path to stay involved in sports by being an athletic trainer. And that's the path she's headed down.
And I think it's great to have women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I got to ask you, though, you know, you hear, I'm talking to Mary Flynn here, you hear in today's society, we always hear like first world problems, you know, we talk about. But from, that's what how I would label this, kind of you see in kind of today's culture, some of the issues that have cropped up in interscholastic athletics, whatever they be, whether they're undue pressure on coaches, and I'm talking about, you know, a small minority here of some parent ruining it for everybody, and I'm talking about just a small minority, but those things can have a trickle-down effect for entire programs. Okay, so I look at you that didn't have the opportunity to play, and maybe, and I'm talking about some of the kids that you know, you can see that when they're playing, they're taking this for granted. And most of them will realize after the fact that I went about it the wrong. That's part of growing up, and that's, you know, an educational lesson that unfortunately comes after the fact. But from your perspective, I'm just curious, when you watch some of that from a person that never got the opportunity to play one interscholastic athletic event, not one. And now today, you play 35 softball games at minimum. If you're an ASA, you play 750.
Right.
You run how many invites in track? Right. You play
the weather cooperates.
You play how many?
Not this year, but
you play how many volleyball matches with a high school season, and 700 more in club volleyball,
right.
And then you play 87 summer basketball games and 35. Regular season basketball games, and Mary Flint got zero. So when you hear whatever issues that are going on with today's environment, I would assume that you say, man, I wish I would have been able to lift some of those problems.
Yeah, I do. And I know, I mean, like I said earlier in the interview, I've given that talk to various teams and groups about appreciate what you have while you have it, your career will go by quickly, or... You know, and remember, a lot of it's being with your friends, riding the bus. That's another thing that was all different. We always rode the bus home. The kids didn't ride home with their parents.
Yeah.
You know, because
and
that,
I know some coaches. Some coaches require them to. Mm-hmm, you got to ride. Yeah.
Sometimes create.
That's where some of the problem. You're right
too. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I've given that talk, and I just feel like I love that things have gotten competitive, and the girls. They're so good now. I mean, those tough man-to-man defenses they played. I mean, we most always played zone. I don't know about you, but you know, we
1-3-1.
Yeah, 1-3-1.
Well, unfortunately, we're going
2-1-2.
Back to the zone.
More people are zoning
because John Hochschild will say kids don't know how to shoot the ball properly.
Right. So get out on him. Get out on him.
All right. So I told you this would go so fast.
Yes.
So I always tell people when we do these type of conversations that this is the beginning of it. All right. So you people out there in the listening audience, like Bill Breeden, you need to carry the conversation on. And you need to tell, you know, your daughter or your granddaughter or your niece about Mary Flint, about people prior to 1973, about your grandma. who couldn't play one stinking game of whatever. And how a modern history Title IX is and the opportunity for girls athletics. I know, I thought it was great at the, because my daughter graduated this year and was fortunate, I thought, has had very positive influences playing through the Mercer County School District. Got to play for Kate Engwall, who understands what Title IX is all about. And I remember Alyssa Hess was on, Alyssa Hess was talking at the banquet, and she gave this really great, like, impassioned speech about, you know, you need to, you have to play for yourself, but you need to play for someone else, too. And she talked about her grandfather, Craig Kelly,
definitely.
You know, which has the impact. And I always tell kids, you know, think about, especially female athletes, think about playing for grandma. Think about playing for mom, who maybe didn't have those opportunities. And think about playing for the culture of the game.
Well, and I think the other thing that's important, and, you know, Mary kind of alluded to this, and I was lucky to play for Diane Schumacher at Augustana, who always was very, you know, she was a trailblazer herself in softball and as a Hall of Famer in the game of softball. You know, she always impressed upon us as her players of being, her phrase was being students of the game and learning that history. And I appreciate being able to come in and have this conversation and maybe share some of the backstory for some of the kids that we know and the people that we know that are listening to us or will pick it up online and listen to it and learn about where we came from and that it really isn't that long of a history and how some of those people that we were blessed to be influenced by, you know, I had Denise Wiggin was my seventh grade basketball coach who was our junior high English teacher and man, was she tough. But she impressed upon us working hard and playing hard and she was tough on us in the classroom. And, you know, and Coach Goff during high school, you know, I was blessed to play for some great coaches that were blazing that trail. And I think it's important, as you said, with our daughters and granddaughters and nieces and, you know, all those down the line that and the current players that they understand where we've come from. And I appreciate the chance to share that this morning.
So thanks. I think it's great. I mean, there's so many stories and all that you can remember. But, you know, with us being Mercer County now, I did want to make sure I got on during the interview sometime. We had some great, Aledo had some great rivalries with Westmer. Westmer had some wonderful athletes. I mean, we just played, and I'm still good friends with so many of them. And Barb Childs, I think, was the first female athletic director in the state, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, wow.
Cannot tell you what years it was, but that was huge. And, of course, I go back with coaching against Jeanette Neild a lot.
Oh, yeah, me too.
And
then
Pam Bischoff at Rockridge. And those are still some great friends of mine. And, you know, you can make great friends in the coaching profession, too.
I told you guys the hour would go extremely fast. And, like I said, if you see Katie or Mary around town, ask them about some of their observations and ask mom and grandma and, as we mentioned, aunts about their experience as well. Thank you very much for coming in today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Okay.